Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is June 1st, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. If you were hoping to run for office this year, you have until 5 p.m. to make up your mind. Today is the deadline for candidates to file paperwork with the State Division of Elections. And with the filing period nearly over, more than a third of the legislative seats on this year's ballot remain unchallenged. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from Juneau.
59 seats, 40 in the House and 19 in the Senate, are up for grabs in the August primary and November general election. It's a larger-than-usual number because reapportionment requires elections in all but one district. But so far, the state elections website shows only 37 races with more than one candidate. The other 22 seats are unchallenged, meaning the person running will almost certainly win. Retired Juneau lawmaker Mike Miller says the small number of candidates is surprising.
Was it that way when you ran for office?
Oh, absolutely not.
Miller served 16 years in the state house during the 1970s and 80s. That means he won 8 elections.
Maybe, politicians just have a bad name these days and people don't want to do it, although I can't imagine that because in Alaska, I've always been proud to serve with members of both parties.
The single-candidate contests are spread throughout the state. 8 of 19 Senate seats are unchallenged, so are 14 of 40 House races. Candidate numbers have grown since earlier this week, when almost half of the races were unchallenged. Most of the open seats are held by incumbents, and many have a strong hold on their districts.
The seats that are pretty safe, people just don't contest them because it costs money. Although not a lot of money in Alaska, compared with a place like California or even a place like Indiana.
Clive Thomas is a retired University of Alaska Southeast political science professor. The author of an Alaska politics and policy book says plenty of earlier elections have seen uncontested races.
I guess it's hard to round up somebody because, campaigning takes a lot of energy out of somebody and, I guess there's a big deflation when you lose.
Republicans make up the majority of single-candidate races. They have 15 uncontested seats, while Democrats have only 7. Thomas wonders whether people feel much need to challenge incumbents.
Most people in Alaska, I would figure, are fairly satisfied. There's a lot of money around in Alaska. I mean, we're one of the very few states, literally one of two or three states, who hasn't cut its budget. Those people who follow California or read about it in the paper will notice they're going through amazing problems. In Alaska, we had a large capital budget this year. Alaska's in the chips, you might say, and that may affect the way that people feel about challenging or not challenging.
Some of the challenged candidates face no opposition in the August party primaries. They'll face off with another party's nominee in the November general election. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Some of those numbers may have changed since this report was produced. We'll have an update after the filing deadline. You can also check the candidate list yourself by going to our website, kcaw.org, and following the link posted with this report. Ketchikan Representative Kyle Johansson has dropped out of the August Republican primary race, but he plans to run as an independent candidate in the November general election. Johansson filed months ago to run for the Ketchikan-based House seat he's held for 3 terms. He faced 3 other GOP candidates, Wrangell incumbent Representative Peggy Wilson, Ketchikan Visitors Bureau Executive Director Patty Mackey, and Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly Member Agnes Moran. Reapportionment put Wrangell in the same House district as Ketchikan. If his petition is approved, Johansson will appear on the November ballot as a non-affiliated candidate. He will face the Republican primary winner and a Democrat if one files. Ketchikan City Council member and Democrat Matt Olson put in paperwork needed to raise campaign funds, but as of Thursday night, the state elections website did not list him as a candidate. The filing deadline is 5 p.m. today. Some Ketchikan Republicans tried to recall Johansson after he left the House Republican Majority Caucus, where he held one of the top positions. That effort did not succeed, but recall organizers said they would try to bump him off the ballot during the August primary. We'll have more on this story as it develops. A Sitka man accused of setting fire to a business in Juneau's Auk Bay Harbor parking lot Wednesday was arraigned in Juneau District Court yesterday. Judge Keith Levy set James Lee Jefferson's bail at $500,000 cash. Assistant District Attorney Angie Kemp argued that Jefferson posed a danger to the community based partly on a 1991 attempted murder conviction in California, for which he served 8 years in prison. Juneau police say Jefferson broke a window and started a fire inside Brick's Electronics shortly before midnight. Responding officers were able to put out the blaze with a fire extinguisher. A person living in the apartment above the store got out without injury. During yesterday's arraignment hearing, Kemp said Jefferson and his girlfriend made threats against Brick's owners and employees prior to the alleged arson. Levy appointed a public defender to represent Jefferson, who said he lives on his boat and is on disability. A preliminary hearing was set for June 8th, unless a grand jury returns an indictment. Imagine Southeast Alaska as a support center for Arctic energy development. State Senator Bert Stedman is hoping Sitka and Ketchikan can one day be just that. The Sitka Republican is co-chair for the powerful Senate Finance Committee. And earlier this week, he gave a recap of this year's legislative session, but also looked towards the future. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Stedman spent most of his time in front of the Sitka Chamber of Commerce talking about the state's capital budget, especially the money coming to Sitka. Millions of dollars will flow into the community from Juneau this year to fund improvements to a baseball field, a new roof for the hospital, some street paving, a diesel generator for electricity, improvements to the library, and more. But in addition to recapping the last session, Stedman also talked about the future, including the development of Arctic resources.
So to give you any idea on what the Arctic's going to look like 100 years from now, look at the Gulf of Mexico. It is going to look totally different than it does today, regardless if the United States does anything or not, because it's going to be done out of Russia, Norway, and Canada.
That's all going to happen about 1,000 miles north of Sitka. So why would Stedman bring that up to the local Chamber of Commerce? Well, to the answer to that question, we have to go just a little bit south of town to Ketchikan. This year's capital budget put money into the Ketchikan shipyard. It's where the state's new Alaska-class ferry will be built. But Stedman also hopes to position that community to have a shot at offshore maintenance work that could come as energy companies develop the Arctic. Which brings us back to Sitka. Stedman says the need for support and maintenance for whatever develops in the Arctic will be enough that Sitka could have part of it too.
Pulp mill here, the old pulp mill site, and the pulp mill site in Ketchikan together aren't big enough to deal with it. So the work and enhancements that are going to be needed coming in the future are either going to be done primarily here in Southeast or probably British Columbia. And my concern is that we get our piece of the action.
Stedman says there will be competition for that work from Canada and from places in western Alaska, such as Kodiak. But he says geography could give Southeast a leg up.
When you get further west, you get outside of or too far away on the supply chain. So Sitka is uniquely located. We're close to the supply chain, a lot closer than Kodiak and Dutch Harbor. And we have ice-free water, and we have an airport, and we got power, and we got some land, not much, but we got some, and we've got some fjords that are deep.
I would probably give it a lower percentage than a higher percentage that Sitka's going to see some of that, but you know, we always just try to investigate it.
That's Gary White. He runs the Sitka Economic Development Association. He says he's contacted Shell Oil with details about what Sitka has to offer, but hasn't heard back on whether they're interested. He agrees with Stedman's view, though, that if the United States does not develop the Arctic, another country will.
You know, there's all these different views on whether they should be doing that or not. To me, that's regardless. If it happens, it happens. And if it does, then we have an opportunity to hopefully create some jobs here to support the industry.
If Southeast Alaska's role as a support center for Arctic development is part of the long-term future, other smaller goals are part of Stedman's short-term vision. He told the Chamber of Commerce that he wants to pursue improvements to the boating infrastructure at Stargaven Bay, to Swan Lake, and to Sitka's streets, many of which are in need of resurfacing. The state put $2.9 million into paving projects for Sitka this year. Stedman says Governor Sean Parnell should see what's happening when he visits next week.
Whoever's going to, and I don't know who in the community is on point to take the governor around and do all that, whoever's at it, that is, needs to take him on that road. Drive him on Halibut Point Road, too.
Twice.
I mean, these roads are horrible. I mean, they should have been fixed years ago. And if they were in Anchorage or Juneau, they would have been done years and years ago.
Parnell is the Chamber of Commerce speaker this coming Wednesday at noon inside the Westmark. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Police in Sitka and across the state are on the lookout for drivers who are sending text messages from behind the wheel. Alaska law changed on May 11th, making texting while driving illegal. Reading or typing text on a screen while driving is now a Class A misdemeanor in Alaska. That makes it punishable with up to 1 year in jail, although authorities acknowledge the circumstances would probably be severe for someone to receive a full sentence. Sitka Police Lieutenant Barry Allen says so far, local officers have not issued any citations for texting while driving. But he's familiar with the problem. One night after work, Allen was driving down Sawmill Creek Road when a young driver in a Chevy SUV approached from the opposite direction.
I could tell he was texting because he had his phone up about midway of the steering wheel. And he crossed the center line and actually came over to my lane and just looked up at the last second and yanked it back into his lane.
He said the other driver came within a half a car length of hitting him. It happened too fast for Allen to get a license plate number. Otherwise, the driver would have received a call from the police. Alaska is one of 37 states that now bans texting while driving. Under the new law, the penalty goes up depending on the circumstances. Texting while driving becomes a felony if the driver causes injury or death. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And for Sitka Zone weather, today rain is likely with highs around 51 and light winds. Tonight expect showers, lows around 44, west wind up to 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. You're listening to KCAW Sitka.